On this week's Nolan from Adam podcast, we're going to take a little bit of a different tact. We're going to talk to two people who break down numbers, look at projections, have a different slant on how certain players might perform and how certain games might go. Our first guest is Roto World senior football editor Evan Silva. Many know him and associate him strictly with the fantasy football industry. He'll have some tips on players he thinks can be big factors in the second half of the season, as well as how he got into the position he did today. And then we'll be joined by NFL researcher Evan Kaplan. We have a lot of people behind the scenes here at ESPN who help make things happen. And Evan's one of those guys who gives us a lot of facts and information in relation to players and games. And Evan's going to give you some trends here to watch in the coming weeks. But first up, Evan Silva. All right, today our guest on the Nolan from Adam podcast is the Roto World senior football editor, Evan Silva, a friend, somebody whose work I respect and admire, somebody whose work I read on a regular basis. And I figured it would be a good time to reach out to Evan because fantasy is as prevalent as ever. People love that information. The industry is rapidly changing. It's something that I think has gripped our society, and there's nobody that lives it, eats it, breathes it more than you, Evan. And so I guess my first question for you would be, how do you get to be the Roto World senior football editor? How does that happen?
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show, Adam. I mean, I remember, like, I've been watching you since, you know, way back early NFL Network days when Al Davis called you a rumor monger.
Yes. Make sure you accentuate the monger.
Monger, right. Yeah. So I graduated from Marquette University in 2005. I planned to go to law school, and then I just kind of decided that after I graduated, I didn't want to go to school anymore. So throughout college, I always read this website called Roto World, and I actually read it for the baseball blurbs. Mm-hmm. And I was a baseball fan at the time. And the baseball blurbs were awesome because they would use predictive analysis, because it wasn't just rehashing what would happen in a game or, you know, telling a story about the box score. The blurbs would talk about what to expect in the future. They'd talk about some, like, statistical regression, things like that. They were done by a guy named Matthew Pouliot. He's a really smart guy. He had read Bill James. He's actually in the Fantasy Hall of Fame now. But I started emailing Roto World after college a bunch of books that I had written in high school and in college. They were like preview magazines, and I wrote them about a bunch of different sports. And I just wanted to show Roto World that I was really passionate and a capable writer. And I was into predictive analysis, even though I obviously had no idea what I was doing at the time. So I got into contact with Greg Rosenthal. He gave me a shot. They let me work for free for like 6 months. And they hired me. I wound up getting bought by NBC. And that opened up some doors for us. And Greg Rosenthal, of course, went to NFL.com, where he's now a superstar on NFL Network with Chris Wessling, who I worked with for a long time at Roto World. And so here we are, me, Nick Menzio, Pat Doherty, Ray Summerlin, Josh Norris, Jesse Pantuosco. And then we hired Rich Rebar full-time this past year, and he's been a tremendous addition.
So you wrote books in high school and college on basically statistical analysis?
Well, I would say that they were like season preview books.
Yep.
Where I would preview the upcoming NBA season. You know, I would get into like high school basketball recruiting to try to figure out how good college basketball players were going to be, or, you know, high school players transitioning to the college level. I would do that about all different sports. My friends thought I was crazy. But it was just something that I really enjoyed.
But you know what? It's interesting. I mean, I love reading the sports newspaper growing up. I used to wait for the newspaper to be delivered to my driveway, and I would read the New York Times and Newsday. My dad would come home from work, and I'd pass along little information, and I'd say, "Dad, you'd never believe who the Yankees are going to trade for. You'd never believe, you know, what's going to happen." So I guess really what you feel passionate about is always something that lends itself to a line of work later on in life. So how did you fine-tune that and turn it into the intelligent analysis that you have today? How did you perfect that art?
just really trying to learn, you know, and trying to, and so I really had no idea what I was doing when I was, you know, 22, 23 years old, yep. writing on Roto-World, trying to figure out how to become better at essentially, like trying to predict the future. And so a lot of mistakes made along the way and, you know, still make a lot of mistakes. But I think that, what Daily Fantasy did for us really pushed us forward, as an industry, because I mean, fantasy football is a decision-making game. And I think that that's why so many poker players have gotten into it over the years. The goal is really to simply make better decisions than your opponent. And then if you make better decisions, you will raise your probability of winning. And, you know, you try to resist biases, especially recency bias. What happened last week needs to be examined closely, but it's not always predictive of what's to come. And Daily Fantasy has really helped us take a big step forward in this regard, because it's not a bunch of season-long guys anymore throwing season-long fantasy rankings at the wall. We're breaking down games. We're breaking down matchups at a very intense, very micro level, and trying to figure out what data points contribute to positive or negative outcomes.
You talk about making mistakes, admitting making mistakes. We all do. But your job is essentially to make predictions. What's your process for that, and how do you deal with being wrong, Evan?
Yeah, so I do a team preview series in June and July where I write about every skill player on every team and then look at the team's win totals posted by the sports books and use a combination of regression statistics and just my own feel for each team's personnel and decide whether to go with the over or the under on every team's win total. And I went 18-13-1 last year, was about 500 the year before. So my goal is to just keep getting better. And then obviously we do fantasy rankings before the season, and those are essentially predictions. And then every week during the season, I do a matchups column on Thursday, which essentially makes predictions about every player in the NFL from a fantasy angle and every game relative to the lines posted by the sports books. And a lot of analytics goes into all that. I mean, I'm watching the games, but you have to take all that with a grain of salt, because then you become really subject to all kinds of biases when all you are doing is watching the games. Mm-hmm. So with these predictions, you know, I have huge misses each year, each week. And, you know, this is just going to happen. But the goal, I think, is to have a good process, but also to continually reevaluate our process and learn from our mistakes and try to get better at forecasting. No matter what the field, you know, weather, predicting, you know, what's going to occur in politics, forecasters are going to get stuff wrong, and that keeps us humble, but we're definitely always trying to get better. And I think that we really are getting better. And that's where DFS has really, really pushed us forward. You know, again, we are like the weekly competition that Daily Fantasy brings to the table is a great way for us to measure our own hits and misses and try to, we've figured out things like game script and the way that game flow, how that impacts running backs, and how it impacts wide receivers. I mean, if a wide receiver is in a situation where his team is going to be rallying back from a deficit in the game, he's more likely to see more targets. If a running back is on a team that is likely to win, he is going to be in position to get more carries. So, you know, being able to figure out all those things on a micro level also helps us from a macro level, because we really want running backs on good teams. And we certainly don't shy away from like wide receivers who play on teams with bad defenses. Mm-hmm. They may be more likely to be in games that are going to shoot out, or their team is having to rally back from a deficit.
What's one mistake you've made this year that stands out in your mind right away, that you learned something that you wish you had known weeks or months ago?
Well, I put a lot of stock into preseason. I think that I put more stock than most people into preseason. And for the most part, preseason games really help us forecast what is going to happen early in the season. I would say the best example of that is what players in that critical third preseason game are getting the first team usage.
Right.
Now, there are definitely situations that are outliers to that, like the Bears proactively hid Tarik Cohen during the preseason. We didn't really know what to expect. He wasn't out there running with the first team. So there are always going to be outliers. But one thing I put too much stock into the preseason with Deshaun Watson, because he really struggled in the preseason and he looked awful in the first couple of games. And I got way too down on him entering or like through two games and the entirety of the preseason. And so that was a mistake. I was not high on him enough entering that week three game against the Patriots, who had showed us that they really were struggling on defense. Mm-hmm. And so that was a miss by me. I was able to quickly learn from that mistake and jump on the Deshaun Watson bandwagon. That has quickly become one of the most efficient offenses in the league.
So you are now sold on Deshaun Watson.
I don't know if I would go that far because, you know, I don't want to be like bouncing up and down, right, you know, on a player. But I think it's definitely very important to realize that, you know, the mobility that he brings to the table, his ability to make, like he will make a mistake and then he has incredible resiliency. Like he will bounce back on the very next play. He never goes into a rut for like, you know, series after series or even play after play. He is a very, very confident young man, and they have good weapons around him, especially with Will Fuller added to the receiver core, and Bruce Ellington in the slot has been kind of like a dynamic playmaker for them.
I think that speaks to Deshaun Watson's character and what everybody said about the young man.
Absolutely.
When he was leaving Clemson, and why Dabo Swinney anointed him the Michael Jordan of the NFL draft last year and said anybody who passed on him would regret that. Cleveland. But
yeah,
I mean, that's sort of the scouting report on him leaving college.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even say that he is a great athlete, but I wouldn't say that his arm strength or his accuracy from a passing standpoint is, you know, it's nowhere near like Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. It's not even really near Deshaun Kaiser. But because he is a smart player and he's decisive and he's able to bounce back from mistakes, whereas like Deshaun Kaiser couldn't bounce back from mistakes, that gives him an advantage, and he has excelled. You know, he's this has so far been one of the best runs by a rookie quarterback in NFL history.
Yeah. So you play fantasy sports, Evan, correct or not?
Oh yeah, I play a lot of fantasy sports.
And so, how many leagues are you in, and how much DFS action do you play in a given week?
I play a lot of DFS, mostly on FanDuel, a little bit on DraftKings. I play in 14 season-long leagues.
Wow.
Four of them are high-stakes leagues on FFPC. One of them is called the Main Event, and we are 5-1, and it's a $1,750 entry. So we're pretty excited about that. Wow. We just had a monster week with Mark Ingram and Jerick McKinnon and Larry Fitzgerald on our team. I'm in a lot of season-long leagues. I play a lot of DFS. And I do a lot of best ball leagues during the off season on my fantasy league and FFPC. And I think that those are going to continue to become more and more popular each year.
What is the most you've ever won in one night in DFS? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah. In 2015, I won the Thursday bomb on FanDuel, and I won 20,000 for getting first in that contest. And of course that was, you know, a really good week in general because I just kind of got everything right that week. And so the total winnings for the week was a lot more, but that was my biggest win, just winning that tournament.
We were talking about some of those mistakes. How much do you beat up yourself mentally and hear from people outside when you get something wrong? Because you got to deal with a lot of negativity, I would think. I see that here with Matthew Berry, who gets very sensitive about these kinds of things.
No, I know exactly what Matthew Berry goes through. So I'm very, you know, like I said before, I'm continually trying to, get better and improve my process and learn from mistakes like the mistake that I made with Deshaun Watson. But I'm like also very comfortable with my decisions. So, you know, I know that there are people that you know, they'll have a guy on their bench. They probably didn't even really consider starting the guy, and he will go off on their bench. Like Sharkhandrick West, you know, the other week he had a two-touchdown week. He wasn't a good start, but he did score two touchdowns. And so people will look at their bench and they'll be like, why did I not even start him, you know? But the fact of the matter was he was not a good start.
No.
So that does not bother me in the least. And I'm very comfortable, like, taking my W's and my L's in terms of week-to-week lineup decision-making.
What's the biggest change about fantasy football since you began writing for Roto-World over 10 years ago? What would you say that might be?
Without question, well, we already mentioned Daily Fantasy, but without question, it is the coverage of the NFL. I remember it was the first or second year that I wrote for Roto-World in, like, 2006 or 2007, and there was an entire, like, February through May where we did not do a single blurb on any Raiders players because no one was even covering the team. So now the Raiders have, you know, seven different beat writers, and nothing like that would ever happen. And I think that a really big reason for that is the growth of fantasy football, which has been assisted by the growth of Daily Fantasy. And so there can never really be a moment where, you know, there's never a moment for pause, as you know better than anyone.
It is more relentless than it has ever been. I have actually had that conversation with various coaches and executives around the league saying that I believe fantasy drives the popularity of the sport. And it used to be 10, 15 years ago, I would have people stop me and say, hey, how are the Giants going to do? How are the Bears going to do? How are the Packers going to do? And I seldom get asked that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I get asked all the time, as I'm sure you do, even more than me, should I start this player or that player? Should I draft this player or that player? And fantasy has sort of taken over people's thinking, and I think it's changed the way that we all watch the sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, every team has, you know, I would say that like 7 or 8 years ago, it was a lot if a team had three beat writers. And now you look at like the Eagles coverage. I mean, they've got 15 beat writers. So just the coverage of the sport. And that is brought out by interest, you know, for the reasons that you mentioned.
Okay, let's talk about the big injury in the NFL this week, Aaron Rodgers. He goes down with the broken collarbone. There could not be one injury that would impact the fantasy football landscape more than Aaron Rodgers going out. What is your assessment for how this is going to impact the Packers, their wide receivers, their running backs, their offense in general?
So what usually happens when a backup quarterback and you know, takes over, and people who have been trying to start Stephon Diggs and to a little bit lesser extent Adam Thielen, but Kyle Rudolph, you know, the outlooks for those players week to week becomes much more volatile. The production that those guys are able to put into the box score, there's a lower floor there, because Case Keenum, you know, he can have a game where he throws for 140 yards, and no one's really going to produce when a quarterback throws for 140 yards. So the book is very limited on Brett Hundley at the NFL level. He has played in three preseasons. He missed one of his preseasons due to an ankle injury. He does have a 10-2 touchdown interception ratio in the preseason. He's also rushed for two touchdowns. He is surrounded by a pretty good offensive line. They have dealt with some injuries, but they've also got pretty good depth, and they've, you know, they've been able to keep it together for the most part, and they should get those guys back healthy. But what stands out about him is his athleticism. In the 2015 draft, if you look at like Spark athleticism scores, he was the second most athletic quarterback in that draft behind only Marcus Mariota, and he ran for 30 touchdowns in three seasons at UCLA. So I think he's going to become a very interesting streamer quarterback who could turn into a guy that you want to start every week, because he can run for yards and run for touchdowns, and he's surrounded by a lot of playmakers in his pass catcher core. And, you know, even the running backs, Ty Montgomery and Aaron Jones, those guys can catch passes. But for the actual pass catchers themselves, they're just going to be a lot less reliable. And, you know, you downgrade them, you're still starting them. You know, you're not all of a sudden benching Jordy Nelson or Devontae Adams, but you feel a lot less confident about them week to week, and they're probably going to mix in some pretty slow weeks going forward.
Give me some predictions of a few guys you think are poised to have a big second half. We're entering week 7, I believe. And so who is on your radar for guys that could be emerging in the second half of the season, Evan?
First guy that comes to mind is John Brown, who, since he returned healthy a couple of weeks ago, he has really dominated snaps in that receiver core behind Larry Fitzgerald. Hasn't had any truly big games yet. He did have over 60 yards and a touchdown on Sunday against the Buccaneers. But he has had a bunch of plays like pulled off the board or negated so far, or plays that should have been where he got both feet in and like Bruce Arians didn't challenge. And he, as long as he is healthy, John Brown is a difference making playmaker. And that is an offense that needs that, because right now, I mean, they're leaning on some old guys, you know, to carry them. In the middle of the field, you got Larry Fitzgerald, and in the backfield, you have Adrian Peterson. They need that explosive element on the outside, and John Brown brings that. And I think that he's a guy that is probably overlooked because people are still pretty skeptical of him, and he has not yet had a truly big game. And I do think that big game is going to come. Hunter Henry is a guy that has frustrated fantasy players so far, because in the first four games, the Chargers insisted on using him in like an even timeshare with Antonio Gates for whatever reason. They finally, 2 weeks ago, upped Hunter Henry's usage to the point where he's now their featured tight end. And he's responded with a couple of really good weeks. He scored a touchdown in week 5. He had 90 yards last week. And the usage for him is exactly where you want it to be for a fantasy tight end. He's just really good. And then another guy, Dez Bryant, has gotten off to a pretty slow start. But if you look at the complexion of the Cowboys as a team right now, they're going to be a shootout team. Their defense is simply not good. And their offensive line is not and impose the will sort of offensive line that it was in 2015, 2016. So Dez Bryant is on a team that I think is going to be in a lot of shootouts. And I think that you can probably acquire him a little bit on the cheap just because he's gotten off to a pretty slow start. And he's had some brutal, brutal matchups. I mean, he opened the season against Janoris Jenkins, Patrick Peterson, the Broncos in Denver, Trumaine Johnson. So I think that he is going to have a really, really big, rest of season outlook. I would be excited to have him on my team. And if you can get him at a, sort of lowered cost, because the person who owns him right now just doesn't realize how valuable he is, I think that would be a great move.
You don't see any physical drop off in his ability?
I think that he is not a separation receiver, maybe as much as he used to be, but no, I think that his game is very much tied to like winning jump balls and winning in the red zone. And although he has not won in the red zone at his usual rate early in the season, I think a lot of that has to do with having to face those difficult matchups and also having to reestablish his chemistry with Dak Prescott. They're only in their second season together. It's not even it's their first full season together, because Dez Bryant missed a bunch of time. And I think that they're going to get rolling the rest of the way.
The Friday column that you do on RotoWorld, it's extensive. It is well-researched. What goes into putting together a column like that? Is that you studying tape of every game and every player? What goes into that?
Yeah, so on Sundays, I watch the Thursday game, obviously. Yeah. I watch like four games on Sunday, and then I'll watch the Monday night game. And then on Monday, I will watch as many games as I can on Monday mornings, and then I'm combing through stats all throughout that day, watching games and combing through stats and just trying to figure out all the stuff that occurred on in that particular week. Yeah. And then trying to figure out what is, what does that mean for the future? So, yeah, definitely, you know, put in a lot of time on those Mondays specifically. It's, you know, it takes the entire day really to figure out exactly what happened in every single game, because there are a lot of players and there are just a lot of games. That's why, like, when we get a couple of bye weeks, it's like vacation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this past week we had four teams on bye, had to analyze two fewer games. And that was like a really, really big help. I mean, I got my column done early, you know, got to hang out with my kid a ton. And, you know, it was a very, very refreshing week for sure.
Hey, Evan, as Antonio Brown says, business is booming, especially in the fantasy football industry. What do you think the future of fantasy holds?
Yeah, so I think that you're right, that the fantasy football industry is in a really good spot right now. I think that, you know, the NFL's emergence as a premier sport in our country is based in large part on that. DFS was in a bad spot for a short time period, mm-hmm. but I think that rough patch may actually work out positively in the long run. Season-long fantasy, I mean, it's been around for a long time, and it's here to stay. I do think that to get really good at season-long fantasy, you should be doing DFS-level research, especially to make your weekly lineup decisions. But, you know, ultimately, anybody can play season-long fantasy. You know, your grandma, your mom, whatever, you know, your little brother, you know. But I think that one way that I think that the fantasy football industry can grow is through best ball leagues, which are leagues where you draft your team and then you don't have to do weekly lineup decision making. The computer actually makes all of your lineup decisions for you. And what that really separates is people who are good at drafting from people who are not good at drafting. Because season-long fantasy, and I know that the draft is the funnest part, and you know that's what we spend so much time preparing for, but that's really not who determines the winners and losers. It's, you know, it's not determined by who had the best draft necessarily. It is determined based on weekly lineup decisions. It is determined based on waiver wire pickups. You know, picking up Jerick McKinnon, picking up Aaron Jones a couple of weeks ago and using him, you know, and getting that huge week out of him to get you a victory. But to really determine who is good at drafting, you play in best ball leagues. And I mean, there are a lot of opportunities to play for, you know, fairly small sums of money. But I think that part of the industry will grow. And I think that is to some extent the future of fantasy.
Hey, Evan, what are some other places that people can find your work?
Yeah, so on Wednesday mornings, I record the Fantasy Feast podcast with Ross Tucker. We talk about pretty much every guy in every game. On Wednesday nights, I do a Roto Grinder show with Rich Rebar and Eric Crane. Eric Crane actually won the Millionaire Maker on DraftKings last year. I think it was in week 9. And then on Thursdays, I publish my matchups column. On Fridays, I do the Swolecast, which is a DFS show with Davis Maddock, Dan Gaspar, and Dave Kitchen. It's a really fun show. On Friday nights, I record a podcast with Warren Sharp, who is an analytics guy with a great grasp on how spreads and totals work and how the sports books make their decisions. And that comes out on Saturdays. And then on Sunday mornings at RotoWorld, we do a Facebook live show that has gotten really good with Josh Norris and all of our writers. So lots of different places to find it.
What does the future have in store for you? Do you want to continue to stay in the fantasy business and do the type of work that you're doing today? Or is there something else that you aspire to do?
No, I just really want to keep getting better and learning from, you know, other fantasy analysts and learning about the game from real analysts. You know, I think I've learned a lot from like listening to Greg Cosell and Lewis Riddick and, you know, Ron Jaworski and just always trying to learn. And I think that really is critical to getting better and realizing that you definitely don't have everything figured out. You have very, very, very little figured out. And so, you know, just trying to take a humble approach and trying to figure out how to better make decisions from a fantasy football standpoint.
Evan, I appreciate taking some time to join us this week. Thank you very much. I look forward to reading your work on Friday like I always do. And good luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks so much for having me, Adam.
We'll be back on the Nolan from Adam podcast with ESPN's NFL senior researcher, Evan Kaplan. But first, a word from DraftKings. It's week 7 and football season's in full swing, which begs the question, how's your fantasy football team doing? Maybe you drafted a dud in the 4th round or your 1st round pick is on the shelf with a bum knee. The good news is it's not too late to forget the injuries and get back in the winning column with DraftKings 1 week fantasy football. With DraftKings, there are many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. The best part is you get to draft a new team each week without any commitment. There's no better way to turn your love of football into cash this Sunday. So get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Schefter, S-C-H-E-F-T-E-R, Schefter, to play free with your first deposit for your share of over $1 million in total prizes this Sunday. That's promo code Schefter to play free with your first deposit for your share of over $1 million. DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, our next guest is the ESPN NFL senior researcher, Evan Kaplan. And what a lot of people don't know is that there are a lot of people behind the scenes here at ESPN who help make it happen. And Evan is one of those people, and Evan proposed the idea of getting him on the podcast to give us a different slant on how some of these matchups and trends in football work. So I said, let's give it a shot. So here's Evan Kaplan. And the first thing we want to ask you about, Evan, is Tom Brady airing it out. What have you seen and what should we know?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me, Adam. Looking forward to it. So Tom Brady, always known for the short, quick passes, obviously going back to Wes Welker, Julian Edelman after him. With the injury to Edelman, things have changed a little bit for Brady. Addition of Brandon Cooks, Brady has the most pass attempts, more than 20 yards downfield this season. His average pass distance, 9.7 yards downfield, which would be his longest in the last decade.
We got a Super Bowl rematch on Sunday night, Falcons and Patriots. What is the history of the Super Bowl rematches in previous years?
We do. So this will only be the 8th time in NFL history that we'll have a Super Bowl rematch in the season following the game. The winner of the Super Bowl has ended up winning that rematch 5 of the previous 7 instances, including last season when the Broncos beat the Panthers in week 1.
So we think advantage Patriots on the night?
On paper, the historical trend is telling us that.
Obviously, one of the biggest stories in the NFL these days is Aaron Rodgers out for potentially the season with the injury. Brett Hundley's coming in. What strengths does he possess that are going to be a factor in this Packer offense?
All right, so Hundley didn't run the ball a ton yesterday. 1 rush attempt, 3 yards. But now going forward, start game planning for him a little bit. He showed the ability to run the ball this preseason. He had 2 rushing touchdowns, tied for the most of any quarterback. Another quarterback that had 2 rushing touchdowns preseason? Deshaun Watson.
Oh, there you go.
He's off to a pretty good start.
So we think that there could be a little bit of Watson in Hundley, perhaps.
Maybe. We'll see. Also, the all-time touchdown pass leader at UCLA, shown the ability to throw the ball as well.
Also, on Sunday, we have the Seattle Seahawks playing the New York Giants. What is the significance of Seattle traveling back east to a familiar site?
Yeah, interesting here. Seahawks coming off a bye. They are 4-0 all-time at MetLife Stadium. Beat the Giants twice, beat the Jets once, and beat the Broncos in Super Bowl 48. They've won all 4 of those games by an average of nearly 20 points per game.
So wow.
Kind of a home away from home on the East Coast for the Seahawks.
So we've hit on Tom Brady. We've hit on the rematch. We've hit on Brett Hundley. We've hit on the Seahawks. Is there anything else in Week 7 that we need to keep our eyes on?
So one interesting thing, the Panthers and Cam Newton coming off a home loss to the Eagles, going on the road. Fantasy owners should be happy about that. Cam Newton on the road this season, 3-0. Total QBR of 77, that's the highest in the NFL. Compare that to his performance at home, 1 touchdown, 6 interceptions, QBR of 35.
That's kind of odd, isn't it?
It really
is. That much better on the road than he is at home?
Strange split there for Cam and the Panthers.
And I know you're crunching the numbers, but why would you subscribe to the fact that he's been so much better on the road?
Yeah, nothing really jumps out right now. And the thing is, too, they've beaten some pretty good teams away from home. Beat the Patriots, obviously. Beat the Lions. The other win, 49ers, not as quality of opponent, but so we'll see this week going into Chicago, Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears coming off their first one.
Hey, Evan, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for the information. Thanks for the numbers. We'll do it again.
Thanks a lot, Adam. It was a lot of fun.
And so that's a wrap for this week's Northern From Adam podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on the ESPN app or Apple Podcast or wherever you listen. Leave us a review, give us some comments, give us your feedback, even suggest guests that you'd like to hear in the future. We're always looking for ways to make this podcast bigger and better in the future. Thanks for listening.